Views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Guardian Radio 96 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk. I hear the people them having fun at the Agribusiness Expo 2025. I'm listening to the Morning Blend team out there this morning. What a fantastic time. I'm getting the show started right now. I got to say happy birthday to Gabrielle Medina Simonette. When they use this word staple and they say that somebody is a staple in the community, Gabrielle Medina Simonette is an example of what they mean. And to the Nassau Village community, Gabrielle is one of the staples that helps to hold that community together with her thrift store and other community activities. We say happy birthday to Gabrielle. I think she is on the family island. I ain't sure, but I know she's celebrating with family, and friends. I also want to say happy belated birthday to Alicia Wallace, founder of Equality Bahamas. I just want you all to know is a couple of people who, when they say it's time to ride, I ready to ride. I saddle up my Chickchannies and we ready to hit the road. Alicia Wallace is one of those women. I get called Taitu Heron is another one. She all the way in Jamaica. So when she say ride, I got to saddle up my dolphins and get to moving. Another quick note before we get the show started. In concert this weekend at Premier Crew, there's an event, the Soiree Mojitos in Paradise. I'm putting this event because a number of the artists that perform at the Dundas Black Box open mic fundraising events will be featured at this event, including the artist 10, including the artist Vless, V-L-E-S-S. They're going to be performing Sunday, April the 6th, 4 p.m. to 12 a.m. at Premier Crew. And why I like this event, the last time I read, it's a brunch type event. And it's $20 entry, and that comes with a complimentary drink. And there are at least 6 artists performing at this event on Sunday. Y'all go support the young people. These artists are super talented. And if you miss them at the soiree, then you can catch them at the monthly Dundas Black Box open mic fundraising events. Okay, so I am expecting Mr. Sheldon Longley, Guardian reporter, in studio. We're going to do our Carifta breakdown next week. This weekend, in fact, the Carifta trials have started. The Connect and Splice Carifta trials have started, and we're going to get into that in a moment. Right now, I just want to mention something that popped into our news feed. And you should have seen it on your phone by now, a developing story from Our News Bahamas. This news is a bit graphic, so please prepare yourself. From Our News Bahamas, just in, police are on the scene of an industrial accident on Prince George Wharf, where a mail garbage operator accidentally got his garbage compressor. EMS is on the scene assisting. This is a developing story. This is a tragedy. There's no report on whether the individual has lost his life as of yet, but even so, if he survives this accident, his quality of life may be severely diminished. So before we start talking Karifta, I just want to make a point. On my way to work this morning, on the roundabout, right in front of the Nassau Guardian, I almost got broadsided by an 18-wheeler. An 18-wheeler who I observed approaching the roundabout and making a decision that despite the fact that I was already on the roundabout, in the inner lane, suggesting that I was going to continue across their intended path, decided to not hit the brakes. And an attempt to bully me and cause me to just bring my car to a complete stop on the roundabout because I would have been unable to continue going around the inner lane given the size of his vehicle and the speed at which he would be entering the roundabout. Once again, it should be obvious, easy to see to the casual observer that there is something terribly wrong with the driving culture among corporate, commercial, and large commercial vehicle operators. Despite all of the law entrenched in legislation, despite all of the offenses and rules laid out in the traffic acts, various traffic acts and amendments in the manual for new drivers, right? Despite everything that has been documented, it appears as if the majority of large commercial drivers feel that they have their own rule on the road, which is the largest vehicle wins. Now, what has happened on Prince George Wharf today is a tragedy. We are concerned first and foremost for the life of the individual injured. But we also have a responsibility to examine whether the driving culture itself creates an environment where accidents and incidents like these will continue to happen. See, because there's a thin line between an accident and an incident. An accident is something that could not be avoided. An incident is something that could be avoided and should possibly result in charges. Most of what we're experiencing on the road today are incidents and not accidents. Now, this would be clearer to the casual observer if they also observed police officers enforcing traffic controls when they observed them happening. As a text, no police presence on the streets to enforce the law. It's a bit more complicated than that because the police are on the streets. The question is, what are they doing? I regularly observe traffic police officers ignoring traffic offenses being committed around them and committing the same traffic offenses. As somebody somewhere must understand how traffic works, how driving culture works. They must understand that authority has been vested in them to manage traffic and not just manage their way through traffic. I have a neighbor who runs a reputable company. And he takes his driver training, the driving culture and driving behavior seriously to the point where I could go and tell him whatever I see on the road. And good drivers and good companies are being tarnished by the behavior of their colleagues and the behavior of those who are responsible for enforcing the law. How many more tragedies must we witness, must happen before the power pretending like it has nothing to do with them? Just one more quick note before I move into Carifta Breakdown. I often travel East Streetdale on the way to work, on the way home from work. The area bounded on the western side by the eastern gate to Government House, all the way down to East Street. I look at that area and I realize that the vast majority of entities in that area are either based in compliance as a sector of the financial industry, or that their jobs require a strict adherence to the principles of quote-unquote compliance, right? And every day that I drive in that area, I wonder who is steering the ship, because those who are most or should be most concerned about compliance seem to have no regard for it. The number of individuals that run the stop sign at the intersection where Peck Slope meets East Hill Street is troubling, especially considering that Government House is right there. That's the same Government House where the person was able to enter the compound and shoot a Marine who was on duty. That same Government House right there. The same Government House where I watched the people throwing nuts over the wall to sell to the staff who was renovating Government House. That one right there. The people who are supposed to be most concerned about compliance seem to have no concern at all. And I'm also speaking to the entities that have disabled parking spots, but don't feel any need to police them. Anyway, I'm going to go to the caller quickly. Good morning, caller. I'm sorry about that, caller. The text says, I don't see those police you say are on the streets. They're there. They're just not enforcing traffic controls. And when you happen to come upon, let's go to the caller, a space that looks like they are enforcing traffic controls, they're not. It's a tax collection exercise. And how did I know that? Last week, producer, we go to the caller. Last week, I was passing Elizabeth Avenue on Bay Street. And as two young officers were pulling cars over to look at their license sticker, right, the sticker that says that the car is licensed, that's all they were doing. Right next to them at Elizabeth Avenue, people were breaking every traffic offense possible, running the stop sign, approaching on the opposite lane, ignoring pedestrians in the road, obstructing traffic, driving without a seatbelt, driving while using their cell phone, immediately next to the two young police officers who's supposed to be engaged in a traffic exercise, except all they're doing, obviously, is a tax collection exercise. Something's terribly wrong. And quite frankly, what troubles me is that what troubles me greatly is that y'all making a mockery of the police. You're making a mockery of them. That's not the only place where it happens. Two young traffic officers, I don't know if this is a protocol or they just take it up on their own. They often set up in the parking lot immediately east of West Street. Intersection of West Street and Meeting Street, where they pull cars over. I don't know why they're pulling cars over, because right next to them, while they're conducting that exercise, you can observe drivers at the intersection ignoring every traffic control. And then drivers on Meeting Street, it's like the drivers collude to help other drivers avoid traffic stops. So the driver will stop and let four cars exit the intersection while a line of cars pile up on Meeting Street because the traffic is obstructed. We're taking one more phone call and then we're going to hop, skip, and jump straight into the Carifta Breakdown. Good morning, caller.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. You said something a little while ago about accidents. You said accidents are something that happens. They're not. accidents are something that are caused.
No, what I said was that accidents are things that cannot be avoided. Incidents
right.
are things that are caused.
No, accidents can be avoided.
Well, but you had a distinction that I'm making, that the thing that we call an accident is typically an incident because it could have been avoided. But I'm trying to show within the driving culture that we already begin justifying our behavior and excusing our behavior through language.
Right.
Yeah.
See, let me explain my logic behind this.
Yes, sir.
It's like if you're working in a car auto shop and you leave the jack stand down, the jack handle,
yeah.
and somebody trips over it. That is a chain of events that caused the accident.
Mm-hmm. Recklessness and negligence.
So, a lot of things are caused. They're not just accidents. That's why you have police. When you have an air crash and all that, they investigate.
Mm-hmm.
To find out what caused it.
Absolutely.
Okay, I just wanted to make that clear.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for attempting to bring clarity to my point, right? That an accident, we say, oh, these are accidents. But an accident is something that cannot be avoided. Like, my windows are down. A bird flies through the car windows and bumped me in my head. I lose control of it. That's an accident, right? An incident is something that could have been avoided or was probably caused actually due to negligence or recklessness. Thank you so much, caller. One last text recounted my experience on Nassau Street headed north onto Bay. My light was on green. As I started to make a right turn, a big yellow 16-wheeler turned left onto Nassau Street, speeding. Because they made a turn, they were necessarily in my lane, even more so because they executed the turn. Because they executed the turn with speed. I repeat, my light was on green. The Nassau Street and Bay Street light are never on green at the same time. He was speeding through his red light, 10 feet from a police station. It was a surreal moment. And I mentally paused trying to figure out what was I doing wrong. How did I end up face to face with a giant speeding wrecking ball? I checked again. Nope. My light was green. I still find it unbelievable. Let me tell you what I find unbelievable, Texter, is that the former controller, officer in charge of road traffic, sat in this studio that I am in right now and made a number of statements. One being, we didn't even know what the law was. I mean, we didn't check it. Two, yeah, we opposed the writing of the law. Three, the way that it was written. 3 years we now, you have every donkey and a Grammy driving through New Providence, turning left on red. In fact, the whole legislation has been so compromised, right? The legislation says you must treat the intersection like a stop sign. The signs indicating you could turn left on red actually say give way. Give way is entirely different from stop. But you know what isn't different? The way that people treat the stop sign. People treat a stop sign now like a give way. And I'm flabbergasted by it. Because I wonder, when you all go to church, what is it that you be thinking in your heads? And I mean this, I say that intentionally. Because all age levels, Grammys, Grampies, teenagers, well-established middle-class people, and you could tell they're well-established by the phone that they're holding up as they're driving, right? Where did this come from? One last call, producer. Good morning, caller. You got 30 seconds.
Hey, morning, Miss Green. How you doing?
Good. How you do?
Boy, you're doing a great job. You're doing a very awesome job at the traffic, right?
Yes, sir.
You're doing such a great job. I'd like to give you two portfolios.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I want to give you the portfolio of littering and traffic.
Yeah.
You think you take up those two portfolios?
Yeah, man, because I tell you what, I already have my czar. I already have my second-hand man, Conkola for littering. I got
okay,
that.
So all that energy I see you putting in that, we need you to put that in littering because these people are nasty, man.
Absolutely, and it's not just that the people are so nasty, it's that we also don't have the proper policies in place to manage the amount of waste that we produce through our prolific consumption. That's it, right? It's twofold. We got a culture of nastiness developing, but it's also developed in a space where the proper tools and resources that could be available are not available.
You know what we need?
Yeah.
We need Elon Musk to come up with a device, right?
Uh-huh.
Rent someone for the garbage out their car.
Uh-huh.
It boomerang back and knock them right in the face.
Right, because it'd have to be a automatic drive car. Because when you get boom in the face, the car need to go in auto drive mode right away. I see why you choose Musk, and I gonna fold. Because you know what I was going to say about him. I gonna fold. All right. Thank you, callers. Thank you, texters. Joining me in studio right now is Mr. Sheldon Longley, sports reporter at the Nassau Guardian, and he also functions as a representative of the B3As, the national federation that governs athletics, track and field athletics in the country. Good morning, Mr. Longley.
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, Bombers. It's always a pleasure.
How you do?
I'm pretty good. How you doing?
I am good, thank you. Okay, awesome. This is the weekend. Events start this evening, right?
Yes, this is the day. This is the day. It starts tonight at 5 o'clock. There's been some slight amendments to the schedule. You know, we start on at 1 o'clock on Saturday now as opposed to 3, and it's still at 4 on Sunday. But this is the day. It starts today. There are going to be some exciting events tonight. The heats and finals of the 100 meters and 400 meters in all divisions. Close things off with the finals of the under 20 boys, 400 meters tonight at 10:20, as well as some exciting events on the field as well. So get your tickets, come on down to the Thomas A. Robinson Stadium, the original Thomas A. Robinson Track and Field Stadium, and support these young athletes as they strive to make the Crypto team.
All right, so we got the 100-meter and 400-meter heats and finals tonight, Friday. Do you normally do those big, big races on the first night of the event?
Well, normally every night you would find one marquee event closing out the meet.
Okay.
Right? So tonight it's the under 20 boys, 400 meters.
All right.
Now on Saturday night it'll be the 400 meter hurdles.
Okay.
And then Sunday we close things out with the sprint hurdles. Right? So it's always one marquee event closing out the meet on each day to attract the public to come out on separate days of the meet.
Now listen, why are the sprint hurdles a marquee event now? I would have thought the relays were the marquee event, but is it because of Devin Charlton's superb win and the performance of numerous athletes on the international stage bringing sprint hurdles from the Bahamas to the world?
Well, sprint hurdles has always been a marquee event.
Okay.
Anytime, you know, we have had a good history in sprint hurdles.
Okay.
Right, and it's a short race, and you know, first of all, there's no relays, right? This is you have to remember this is a Crypto trials, so
okay,
I'm striving to make the Crypto team.
Okay, right? So whoever qualifies will be on the team.
Whoever finishes in the top four or five in that particular sprint event will be considered for the relay.
Okay,
so that's how it works.
Okay, so let's go into this story very quickly from yesterday's Guardian, Aiden and the three Zions. So yes, last week we talked about that, but now I got a real question. In the article, and you can find this in yesterday's Nassau Guardian, you can go online right now and find, in this article, we got Aiden and the three Zions. Now, Aiden is also a 400-meter runner.
Yes.
He says he's focusing on the one and two, these trials.
Yes, he's focusing on the one and two. He is qualified in the one and the four.
Okay, so he's already qualified in the four for Carifta.
Yes.
Now, in terms of qualifying for the Carifta relay team, does he have to run this trials to qualify?
No, but he'll be given consideration because of his time throughout the season, right?
Okay.
He's already running the 100 and 200 meters, and we know what he could do in the 400 meters. So he'll automatically be given consideration in that event. But it's up to the coaches on the team.
All right.
Right. Whoever's selected as the coaches for that team, they will make the decision once we get in Trinidad. But they would definitely go with the four fastest runs we have.
Right, and that's important to note that the decision, we compose the relay team, but the and the reserves, yes, but the decision on who runs is made by the coaching team on site at the event.
The coaching staff.
Coaching staff. Okay. All right. So, because here's my thing, Aiden and three Zions. The Bahamas has four athletes running 47-point races. And what does 47-point race mean?
Well, just 47-point something, right?
Okay, I see what you're saying. All right, all right.
The leading time right now is Zion Shepherd. He actually has run 46. He has a 46.88. That's the leading time among under 20 boys right now. And then the other three, they have all qualified, run under the qualifying standard, which is 47.65.
Okay.
Zion Davis, Aiden Kelly, and Zion Miller.
All right, Zion Miller and Zion Davis, yeah. And then we got Aiden Kelly.
Yes, the only one not named Zion.
That's all right. So now what happens if at the Carifta trials, mm-hmm, you get five or six 400-meter runners that all come under, all qualify?
Well, that's a good problem to have, right?
True.
Once again, it would be on the coach's discretion, mm-hmm, who would run the relay in Trinidad. But it's all based on what happens this weekend. Right, right now, we have four qualifiers. We know that we have four qualifiers.
Right.
That's the three Zions and Aiden. If two more were to qualify this weekend, well, obviously, they'll put themselves in consideration for the relay in Trinidad.
All right. So quick question before we move on to anticipated goals. Goals, right? Who we anticipate to take gold at the trials and then at Karifta as well. The question is about qualifying. What if we have 7 or 8 in the trials, all hitting superb times? What if it's like the Devon's last race where she won by hundredths, one hundredth of a second, right? What happens to those who don't get to Karifta? How important is it for an athlete to begin their season ready to qualify?
And that's very important, like you say, because different times throughout the year, you never know when you're going to run into adverse conditions.
Mm-hmm.
For the entire year, we've been having adverse conditions in terms of wind conditions, right? Most of our sprint races have been wind-aided, right? So
okay.
It's important for you to go out there and put your best foot forward every single time. Head-to-head competition matters,
mm-hmm.
and that's why we have the determining factor in who goes to Trinidad, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you have 3 qualifiers on events and you finish in the top 2 at Karifta Trials, you know, you make your case for being on the team.
All right.
That's how the team is selected.
How early do scouts start watching the track in the season?
From the season start.
All right.
You know, college scouts, they follow our athletes straight through. You know, in this digital age of reporting, you know, everything is online.
Right. So when you see that your competition is heavy this season, you need to get out at every meet and compete to qualify just in case. Because you may not make the Karifta team, but there's still scouts watching. There's still an opportunity for your times to be considered if you have a
pressure off yourself. You don't want to be coming down to the last weekend before Karifta Trials or the Karifta Trials itself and feeling the need to qualify.
Yeah.
You could get that out of the way early. You could focus the rest of the season on just development and fine-tuning yourself to get better.
All right. Now, this is Zion Miller's final year of eligibility at Karifta.
Yes.
Is Aiden Kelly... like, is this an act of, like, camaraderie? And he said, look here, King, this is your year. I can fall back a little bit. I can give you all the opportunities possible to be seen by scouts.
No, I don't think so. I think Aiden Kelly, he's a special athlete, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He is good in the 1, the 2, and the 4. Right? He just chose to focus on the 1 and the 2. Right? It opens the door for Zion Shepherd and Zion Miller to be the 2 representatives for the Bahamas. And mm-hmm. the 20 boys, 400 meters at Karifta, right? I think Zion Davis is pulled out as well because he's running the 400 meter hurdles.
Okay.
So that's a smart decision between his coaching staff. You know, you don't want to put too much workload on him
mm-hmm.
in such a short period of time, right? So he's going to focus on the 400 meter hurdles. But obviously with the time that he ran earlier this season, he's the second fastest right now behind Shepherd.
Okay.
So obviously with the time that he ran earlier this season, he will definitely be in consideration for the relay
pool mm-hmm.
at Karifta.
What I appreciate most... that was sort of reflected in the article. Again, mm-hmm. you guys really should take a look at Aiden and the 3 Zions, because if you plan on being there, whether in the stadium or with your pom-poms at Olympics 2028, let's start following them from now, right? The camaraderie between the athletes, right? And so you need this high level of competition for them to push each other, iron sharp and iron. But when it comes to being a part of a team,
Zion sharpens Zion.
Look here, dear sponsors, if somebody don't start a campaign right now, say Zion sharpens Zion, right? Because I have a feeling in 3.5 years,
mm-hmm.
That could be a saying.
No doubt. This could be our Olympic team in 2028 when you look at it.
Yeah.
You know, this is the first time in over a decade we've had 4 guys running under 48 seconds,
mm-hmm.
and the under 20 boys 400 meters.
And I can be honest, I've not followed track and field to make a historical comparison, but the camaraderie right between these young athletes make me feel like they could manage their personal careers and the team mm-hmm. evolution successfully and take us to LA.
Well, they all want to win. That's the key thing. They're all friends, but they all want to win.
Uh-huh.
And that desire to win is what is pushing them to get better.
Man, look here, I just thought of something. It is athletics concern, but also a bit political. Given the sort of rapid shifting of U.S. migration and immigration policy, with the Olympics being held in L.A. in summer 2028, right? That's before the elections. Are we going to, do athletes need to begin now preparing to be able to compete in L.A.? And do we, the B3As and the Olympic Committee, are we putting together a legal team to ensure that on the legal side, in terms of travel, an entry into the hosting destination, that we don't have any issues with getting our star athletes to their tracks, stadiums, and courts?
Well, that's important. That's important.
Yeah.
The way I see it right now, we have athletes right now who are in the U.S. competing, you know, every day, whether it's in college, whether it's professional, right? So we have to pave the way to make sure, you know, our athletes are able to not just compete, but to represent the Bahamas as well.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah, and I'm thinking there are opportunities for employment here, right? Like you could start a consultancy firm and you work with athletes to ensure that their eligibility status is always good and that their national, you know, their immigration status is good and that they're always aligned with whatever destinations, policies to ensure they could compete. Because that's the last thing you want to be thinking about as an athlete.
Indeed. Indeed. Now, so many times when we travel with these national teams, and we find out at the last minute that an athlete might not have his passport or not might be up to date, you know, immigration-wise, right? So that's important. We have to do a better job of, you know, scouting our athletes, finding out, identifying athletes, you know, finding out which ones are going to be qualified enough to represent us on national teams and make sure they're straight.
Yeah, right.
And deal with that.
Especially if you want them to focus on that, on just training. Let's figure out how we're going to facilitate the other parts of the process. Okay. All right, so Karifta Trials, who are you anticipating for gold? Who you think's going to...
In Trinidad?
Well, yeah, who you think's going to make the team? Or at least, no, because that's a different decision. Who do you think is going to qualify for consideration for the Karifta team, right? Because the team hasn't been selected yet. And then gold in Trinidad.
Well, first of all, I think this is going to be our best year at Karifta since 2012 in Bermuda.
Okay.
That year we had Shawnee, we had Anthony, we had the Collie Minster, we had Ryan Ingram. Mm-hmm. We won about 15 gold medals. I think we're going to come close to matching that performance in Trinidad. Obviously, Jamaica's at a different level right now, right? You have to give them that respect. But the quality of athletes that we have, you know, you could look at the team and say, we're going to win multiple medals. And you could look at the team and say, we're going to win multiple gold medals.
Right? Okay.
And you have an athlete like Kiesra Thomas from Freeport, qualified as a 13-year-old, but couldn't go that year.
Yeah.
And then came back the next year, qualified as a 14-year-old, and won silver as a 14-year-old. This year, she qualifies again as a 15-year-old. Right? So obviously, the expectations goes up. Mm-hmm. Right? But she's a tremendous athlete. You know, I think she's going to be running the 200 and the 400 meters at the trial. She's also qualified in the 100 meters as well and the high jump.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I expect some great things from her. You have an athlete like Jazzy Johnson, who's only 14 years old. I think she's going to do tremendous things in the jumps. You know, I could see her possibly winning 2 gold medals in the long and the triple jump in Trinidad. You know, you have athletes like Jacario Wilson, who's been running extremely well in the short hurdles and the short sprints, right? You have Egan Neely, who's been doing well. When you look at the under 20 division, you have the Zions. You have Aiden Kelly, who's doing well. You have Quentin Gordon, who's qualified in under 20 boys, 100 meters. Right? We have our throwers, our field events. Tasia Stubbs, who's the defending champion in under 20 girls javelin and the correct record holder. Right? She will likely be on the team. And that's another thing. We have 3 qualifiers in under 20 girls javelin. So only the top 2 could go on the team. So it's Tasia Stubbs, Tiare Scott, and Kamara Strong. And they've been battling each other all season.
And so all 3 need to show up and compete.
All 3 need to show up and compete.
All right.
And the top 2 will be selected to the team.
Okay.
So I'm excited, man. I think we're going to do some good things.
I am also excited. But let me ask you a question. So I saw this article in this week's or last week's Tribune. Colonique named Athlete of the Year. Grand Bahamian Quartermiler Colonique Farrington. Quartermiler of the Year at Southwest Baptist University. That's the Bearcats. Where has she been?
Division II athlete.
But where has she been?
She's been there all along.
She competed in Grifter?
I'm not sure she made last year's team. I don't think she made last year's team, but I expect to be on for the trials as well.
Okay, you expect her to come home for the trials as well?
She might be already. She might be already, but she's running extremely well. And that's just the thing. It's not just athletes here who are running well. You got to factor in the college athletes as well, which is why you have to bring it this weekend.
Right, you know? Because they would qualify in under 20, right? Some of our athletes would qualify under 20.
Well, you got some high school athletes in the States who might be under 17.
True.
You know, so just because you're qualified doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be on the team. You have to come here this weekend and compete.
Yeah.
Right? Head-to-head factor is a determining factor, and that you have to finish in the top two.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. Does the B3As facilitate or partner with any entity that operates like a fund or a funding mechanism to ensure that athletes who do want to come home to compete at Grifter Trials could get financial support if they need it? Or do individual track clubs have a mechanism to support their former athlete members to come back and compete at Grifter if they've gone abroad?
Well, I know there used to be a stance a couple of years back where, you know, you pay your own way to come home from college.
Uh-huh.
And then if you make the team, you're reimbursed.
Okay.
Right? And also, but everything is a case-by-case basis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can send in your request to the Beach Relays. We can look at it and we can make a determination going forward. But it would always be in the best interest of Team Bahamas and what we need at that particular time. Right, but there are a lot of athletes who are abroad who I'm sure have registered for this weekend's Grifter Trials.
All right.
So, you know.
It's going to be exciting.
Yes, over 500 athletes right now.
Over 500 athletes?
Registered for the trials.
Oh, wow. Okay, so tell us again, what is the start time for the trials today?
They start at 5 o'clock today, and that's with the finals of the under 20 boys, 100 meters in the under 20 boys, decathlon.
Right. Uh-huh.
That's the first event in decathlon for the under 20 boys.
Okay.
Right, and then they wrap things up at 10:20 tonight with the final of the under 20 boys 400 meters.
All right. And then Saturday
at 1 and Sunday at 4.
Okay. Sunday at 4.
Yes.
I'm excited, man.
Sunday at 3, sorry.
Sorry, Sunday at 3, right, because the times have shifted. Now, where can I go online to just check my times and check all these details?
It is posted on the B3A's Facebook page.
Okay. So you can go to the B3A's, B3A's. Facebook page.
Bahamas Association of Athletic Associations.
All right. And call Anique. Hurry up, come back. Make sure you get here. All y'all athletes, make sure you get here. Why? Because Zion, man.
That's right. Well, a lot of them are already here.
All right. So there's a text here that says, tell us what the selection process, like the technical selection process is for Team Grifter Athletics.
Okay, well, there are qualifying standards, first and foremost, that are set by the Coaches Association at the beginning of the season.
Uh-huh.
Those standards are the fourth place average of the past three Grifter games. Right, so we set a high standard to give our athletes an opportunity to not just make the team, but we want good representation when we get there.
Mm-hmm.
Right, in the event that an athlete doesn't meet that standard and there are no qualifiers in that event, we will then go to the fourth place standard in the region, right?
Okay.
And see if that athlete surpasses that standard.
Okay.
And they surpass that standard, they will be given consideration to make the team, right? You still, let's say you have four or five qualifiers in an event.
Okay.
You have to come to the trials and finish in the top two.
Okay.
The top two would be given consideration for the team, unless it's the sprints where you carry additional athletes for relay purposes.
Okay.
Right. So. Yeah, that's how it works with that.
And how many extra athletes can you take for... athletes can you take? And then how many team members for the relay team?
It's normally about two for the individual event, and then about two or three more for the relay purposes. So we're looking at like about a five-member relay pool.
Okay. All right.
Sometimes you have athletes who are in the jumps who are sprinters as well.
All right.
Right. So that might limit the amount of athletes that you take for relay purposes because you have other athletes on the team already who could contribute towards the
relay team.
Yes.
And I'm thinking about scheduling of events.
Mm-hmm.
These events are organized understanding the composition of teams that some field athletes may be participating at track events. So when we're scheduling these events, we're taking that into account, right? It's not the luck of the draw, like, oh gosh, this year I can't do it because I'm in field when the relays are running.
Yeah, and you want to space out the events as well. Like, you don't want to have the prelims too close to the semis or the semis too close to the final. You want to space out the events to allow the athletes to have
sufficient recovery time.
Recover.
All right.
Right. So that's given consideration.
Okay. All right, so let's get back to Corifta. Anticipated goals. How many goals do you think we're bringing home at Corifta?
I like him for between 10 to 15.
10 to 15 goals?
Yeah. I think that'd be a very good representation we could get between 10 to 15. Gold medals.
All right. Now, who does Jamaica have to watch out for? Their team, Bahamas. Let's not be ashamed to say it. Let's acknowledge where we are so that we can propel forward. Jamaica is the team to beat still.
Yes.
At Corifta.
I don't like the gold medal. But if I do, you know, you have to mention certain athletes who you expect to do extremely well, certain elite athletes.
Mm-hmm.
If I have to name five, Kiaja Thompson, top five.
Okay.
You know, I think she's going to win a gold medal, either the two or the four. Jazzy Johnson, I think, is going to win a gold in probably the long jump. I like Jakaria Wilson. I think he could possibly win a gold in the under 17 boys, 110-meter hurdles.
All right.
I like Egan Neely. I think he could possibly win a gold medal in under 17 boys, 400 meters.
Okay.
Right. I relate teams across the board. I like Tasia Stubbs. Tasia could win a gold medal in the under 20 girls javelin. Right. I think we stand a chance in the under 20 boys high jump. I think we stand a chance in that with William McKinney and Joshua Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think it's the under 20 boys triple jump with Jonathan Rogers. I think we stand a chance in that. So across the board, good events across the board. Under 17 boys javelin, I think we stand a chance in that with Keir Williams and Wyatt Cartwright. So yeah, it's a lot. And the relay teams, under 20 boys 4x4, under 20 girls 4x4, under 17 girls 4x1, we're going to stand a chance. We'll be strong.
All right, now, Trinidad and Tobago say, look here, we birthed Corifta. And you all come into Trinidad this year. Who
we come for all the gold.
Who are we watching for out of Trinidad this year? Or which events are we thinking that Trinidad's going to have an extremely strong showing in?
Well, I haven't been following much of Trinidad athletics, right? So I don't know what they did at their trials. I did see a little bit of champs last week in Jamaica. And there you will have a strong team again. They'll be very strong. They have two guys running 45 point in the under 20 boys 400 meters, which is just crazy. That's remarkable.
45?
Yeah. But normally I notice with Jamaican athletes a lot, they peak early,
mm-hmm. Right?
Like their coaches would have them set up on programs to peak for champs, which is before Corifta.
Ah.
And then in some situations at Corifta, those same athletes might be burned a little bit, or you might not see as strong performances as what you saw at Champs.
So is Champs the premier Jamaican event?
It's their premier school event.
Okay.
That's like our Bahamas High School National Track and Field Championships.
All right.
Right. And every year at Champs, they have outstanding results.
So that's our secret weapon. Our secret weapon is their own potential deficiency, which is they may have actually ran out of steam.
Yes.
After Champs.
I noticed it a couple of years back when they had two guys running 45 and under 20 boys, 400 meters at Champs. And by the time his Corifta came around, Terrence Jones from the Bahamas won a gold medal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because he was conditioned to peak at Corifta.
I got you.
You see?
Yeah.
So maybe that could work in our favor.
Yeah. You know? Also, what could work in our favor is we need to get all our track and field athletes in the residential camp on a family island, one of the long set. Not Rumkey, they're too short. We need a Long Island.
Rumkey?
Let's name one of these, let's rename one of these long, long islands, mm-hmm. Rumkey, mm-hmm. and put them all there, right? And let's get the car out of the culture, right? Let's get the car and the ease of movement out of the culture. And let's begin training athletes in a different culture, right? In a different, not just a mindset, but a broader environmental shift. Where their focus is different. So, you want to go to the store to get a snack? It ain't as easy as just jumping in the car and zooming around the corner. Mm-hmm. You gotta take a jog for what you want. Everything is training, right?
I feel you. But if you look at our stadium, every day during track season is crowded with athletes, like about 200-300 athletes every day. So they put in the work.
They're taking advantage of the resources that are available for as continuous a training program as possible.
Yes, indeed.
But
yes.
Can them living together shift the energy at the team level in the same way that it does for other types of sports?
It could. It's possible. But I like the atmosphere now.
All right.
Right.
So give us a timeline for when we'll get the official CORIFTA team list.
That team is right now. We're planning a press conference for you either Monday or Tuesday. Most likely it'll be Monday.
After the event.
Yeah, so it wouldn't be Sunday night, right? But we'll have the official naming of the team on Monday. We're hoping to get a full 80-member team.
All right.
Right, and right now we have 61 qualifiers, so we're on pace to do that.
All right. Sheldon, I want you to sit with me for a moment as we transition to the Aquatics Championships 2025. The Bahamas Aquatics Federation has already selected their 36-member swimming team. I just won't call their names. Mm-hmm. I won't call the young people them name because we're bad in the water, but it doesn't necessarily get the amount of attention that it should do, especially considering we are waterbound people, right? And being able to swim and navigate the water is a part of our cultural heritage, not just an athletic competition. So 36-member swimming team selected for the CORIFTA Games. That's an article in the Nassau Tribune, 17th of March. They've made their selection a little while ago after the last chance meet. Swim team, female swimmers, age category 11 through 12. Sienna Campbell, Scarlett Donaldson, Isabella Munro, Taylan Nichols, and Samaya Roll. Age 13 through 14, Isabella Cucurullo, Alyssa Ferguson, Celeste Gibson, Cyan Isaacs, Deanne McKenzie, Violet Saralegui, Kimaya Saunders, and Skylar Smith. 15 through 17, Tia Isabella Adley, Leela Lewis, Mia Patton, El Thurberg, Zoe Williamson, and Elise Wood. Male swimmers, 11 through 12, Kai Bastian, Logan Camacho, Dakari Cooper, Nateo Knowles, and Dexter Russell. 13 through 14, Kriston Joseph, Alexander Murray, Trace Russell, David Singh, Kaylin Williams, and Isaac Wright. 15 through 17, Tristan Hepburn, William Farrington, Ellie Gibson, Aiton Moncur, Donald Saunders, and for the Open, and Caden Wells. Caden, I forget you. And Caden Wells. For the Open Water Swim Team, female swimmers category 14 through 15-year-olds, Gillian Albury, Samira Donaldson, and Madison Fox. 16 through 18 years old, Madison Gilbert, Alana Murray, and Aaron Pritchard. For the male swimmers aged 14 through 15, Lachlan Menzies, Trace Russell, and Kaylin Williams. Age categories 16 through 18, Kevin Johnson Jr., Malcolm Menzies, and Miles Saunders. I'm going to say congratulations to the swim team. They are going for their seventh straight championship, and I think they could do it. We know they could do it. Uh-huh. We're gonna do it. Congratulations to all the swimmers that qualified. Another question, as we're wrapping up, does the regional body decide where the next CORIFTA is going to be hosted?
Every year they have a CORIFTA Congress, right? So there'll be a meeting in Trinidad while we're there.
Okay.
And during that time, they will determine where the next CORIFTA Games will be held.
All right. CORIFTA Congress takes place during the games because you got everybody there.
Yes.
All right. Does it take place after the games, in the midst of the games? At what point does it take place?
Sometimes in the midst. They mix it up. It all depends on the organizing committee there when they could find a time suitable for all the cultures. It normally happens, I think, that middle date.
Within the middle.
Yeah.
All right. And what are the determining factors for deciding the location? Is it number of qualifiers, or is it more based on the technical and financial capacity to host the games and provide the best competing environment?
Well, you state your interests. When you're there, you state your interests. You know, you get, approval from your respective government, right, whether we can host it or not. And then they have a vote right there in the Congress. So they make a board and they determine, you know, okay, well, we'll go to Bahamas, we'll go to Jamaica, you know, we'll go to Barbados. So that's how it happens.
Okay. No, this is good stuff. Now, what else do you all decide there? Like, I just want you all to know, I'm very, very upset at the Bahamas Olympic Committee. While Dr. Christian Campbell was calling for the resignation of the president and the committee members for negligent or reckless communication about decisions made, right, in selection processes, I called for the resignation of the entire Olympic Committee because how could Olympics have breakdancing and the Bahamas didn't field the team. Right? Like, from the national level to Junkanoo, straight down to the little children in the schoolyard, we got top class mugglers.
Any global event as high as the Olympics, they're always qualifying events that you have to go to.
Right.
Even for breakdancing. Right, so break, that might have been breakdancing's first time in the Olympics, but I'm sure there are events that you have to qualify to go to the Olympics. You can't just pop out the Olympics and compete.
Yeah, no, but this is what I'm saying. Nobody was doing any reconnaissance and say, look here, these by them have real breakdancing association, man. We should, and they talking about the Olympics, we should work. Anyway, I want to be at the Carifta Congress to suggest expanding the disciplines present at Carifta. What are the newest or the most recent additions to the Carifta schedule of disciplines? And how do you expand it? Have you all reached a point where you're not going to expand it? Are you tracking the global expansion of the space?
Well, I'm not a part of the Carifta Congress, right?
Yeah.
But let me say this. Whatever is done on the junior level mimics what happens on the global level.
Okay.
NACAC is a member of World Athletics, right? And Carifta is owned by NACAC. So, you know, you want to be, you know, in cohesion with what's going on.
Right,
globally,
absolutely.
Globally, right? I could say at the Carifta level, I think this is the first time that we're having an under-17 boys octathlon.
Octathlon?
Right? Yes.
All right.
Normally, it would just be an open boys octathlon, right? But this year, we're having under-20 boys decathlon. And under-17 boys octathlon, right? So they're giving the younger guys an opportunity to compete in the multi-events.
All right. Yeah. I got to put on my, yesterday was March Women's Month hat.
Yeah.
What efforts are being made to expand participation to under-17 and under-20 girls in the octathlon and decathlon?
Well, I'm sure that'll probably be the next event. You know,
the expansion to include girls.
Right now we have open girls heptathlon, right?
So, okay.
So maybe at the next Olympics, I'm sorry, the next Carifta, they'll look at having under-20 girls heptathlon, and then maybe under-17 girls pentathlon.
All right. Yeah. That
might be the next move. But whatever event happens for the boys, you want to be uniformed and have the same event for the girls.
All right. Another quick question. Watching the reel this week, I saw a video clip of a young man doing the long jump with an unorthodox technique. Mm-hmm. He actually did like a cartwheel.
Yeah.
Right? A long jump.
Is it legal?
So it was an American story, I think, and people in the comment section were saying, I mean, it's super cool, but, you know, unfortunately, it's an illegal move. Mm-hmm. Is that move illegal here? Like, what for long jump in particular, are we going to see an expansion of technique, allowable technique? Like, when we're looking at the high jump, some of the techniques I see these boys using, I'm just like...
Well, we've modified a great deal, right? I've never seen any unorthodox movements or strategy in the long jump, right? It's always the standard. You run, you hit the board, you
right.
do the flash, you can jump. You have to question what's legal and what's not legal. Remember, we follow World Athletics standards.
Right, so whatever the World Athletics standards endorse, then you could do that here.
Yes, whatever the global body endorses, we follow that.
All right. It just looked exciting, and I thought, well,
it's different.
Right. How are less developed countries going to make their mark if they're not able to use their natural inherent talents and abilities to enhance their competition?
Sports on the whole has evolved.
Yeah.
When you look at the high jump, we've gone from the scissors to jumping over the board backwards. You know, we had a guy compete a few weeks ago on the 17 boys from CC Sweden.
Uh-huh.
First time high jumping. Right? Well, first year high jumping, I should say. And he qualified for Carifta. Right? His name is Obadiah, I think, Sherazar. He qualified for Carifta. Right? And he jumped the same height that the gold medalist at Carifta jumped last year. You know, so that's just raw talent. Right? Even in baseball, they're using torpedo bats now.
Right? Hold on, what's a torpedo bat? What's a torpedo bat?
You're just moving the sweet part of the bat to a different portion of the bat, right? Like you're moving the handle down a little bit.
And that's been endorsed by the global...
It's legal. It's legal under Major League Baseball regulations, rules and regulations, right? So you're just moving the sweet part to another part of the bat.
All right. I got a text here that says, I just want you to reiterate. The text says, because we went over, the text says, we've already had 300 meets for the year. Why are we still talking about trials for Corifta? Shouldn't we already know what our students can do? So just in our last 30 seconds, go over the selection process and then briefly why so many opportunities are available to be selected to the team.
Well, in any season, you want to give your athletes as much opportunities as possible to qualify.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The Corifta trials are mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You have to come home for the Corifta and compete and be in the top two. You have qualifying standards. If we don't meet those standards, pretty much you can't go.
All right.
Right? Even if you have three athletes in the event who have all qualified, you have to come home for the trials and finish in the top two. So it's mandatory. Head-to-head competition is important.
Absolutely.
That's what we need to see first and foremost.
Okay.
And then we go to the qualifying standards after.
All right. Thank you. Listen, thank you very much. I hope I could get you back in studio next week so we could talk about the list formalized. Also, I have another question for you. I'm preparing my De Robus submission to CARICOM, right? I just want to know, have you all started investigating the yellow yam in Jamaica?
You need to do something, man. Those tires going to Jamaica astronomical.
Yes, I say I need to formalize my De Robus petition to CARICOM. I'm just trying to get some final details down. And Bahamian athletes, you're leading the conquer what? Unless you're Seventh-day Adventists. We're not pushing you past your religious boundaries, right? But if you can't eat the conch, then eat the ganap. We got to use our secret weapons.
Hey, the conch works, man. It works.
Absolutely. And in fact, do the research. It works. Conch has an enzyme that if you eat it raw, the enzyme is still like functional. Mm-hmm. And it helps you to digest. The conch digests itself while you're eating it. A bowl of raw a conch salad.
Mm-hmm.
One bowl of conch salad should feed one man for 1.5 days. That's how much nutrients you get from it.
There you go.
Anyway. Thank you, Sheldon. We're getting ready to triple jump our way into Corifta while some of these other boys are tripping, triple jumping their way across the floor in the House of Assembly. We're headed to Trinidad and Tobago. Thank you, Mr. Longley, for joining me
anytime
today. You guys, please stay tuned because Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri is up next.
Thanks much.
For fast, reliable, and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
As a healthcare professional, you dedicate others. But even with the best care, legal challenges can arise. Protect your practice and your peace of mind with medical malpractice insurance from Star General. At Star General, we've partnered with Lloyd's of London to bring you comprehensive professional liability insurance designed specifically for those consulting or practicing privately. Visit our website today so you can focus on what you do best, caring for your patients, while we take care of the rest. Star General, insurance made simple.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.